talk, big opinions, the panel.
And our panel today consists of Hamish Bidwell and Gordon Findlater. Gordon, good morning to you, Gordon. Interesting, the All Blacks just keep going down, it seems. We're hearing rumours perhaps of another two or three this morning. Gordon, what is this All Black team going to look like, you think, when they name it finally?
Well, yeah, tell you what, Smithy, I mean, geez, coming into this series, you look at the Irish, the fact they beat us last year, you know, they did well in the Six Nations, and you add in what's going on this week, and I mean, geez, they've just got to be licking their lips, don't they? I mean, if ever there was an opportunity for them to get a historic series win in New Zealand, if it's not meant to be now, then it will never meant to be, surely.
Hamish, are we looking at a method of the future? No hands-on coaching. We're doing the coaching by remote because it's effectively, I guess, what's happening now. Although Joe Smith's come in, how do you see his role?
Critical. A huge boost. I think the less that Ian Foster's hands are on the tiller, the better. I'd almost say the same for John Plumtree. It's good that Sam Whitelock's basically running the forwards this week. And I think the thing that we've lamented on Foster's tenure is a lack of clarity around the All Blacks, a lack of actual leadership, whether that's on or off field. Real plan about how they're going to play. Smith's a real detail man. The fact that it's Ireland this week is an incredible stroke of luck that only adds that level of detail and clarity that the team will go out with. I think this is really exciting. I think it's shades of the Baby Blacks of 86. I think the All Blacks can't lose this week. If they win, it's a magnificent achievement to go up with some of the great test match wins we've ever had. If they lose, they'll get a pass mark. But I think more than anything, I think this is a team that the country have sort of gradually fallen out of love with. They find them hard to relate to, hard to like. I think this is a chance for everyone to rally around the team. The team themselves will be sweet. Like, I just, players are really myopic. They're inwardly focused. They'll have their jobs and they'll be concentrating on those, and they won't really care about who's not there, who's not coaching. They'll just be wanting to do what they do. I think it's all round a really exciting development, and perhaps a look to the future, a future hopefully without Ian Foster.
Well, Hamish, that's an interesting point you raise. Can you remember a time when you're an experienced journalist when we'd sort of fallen out of in love with the All Blacks previously for the same reasons?
81 would come to mind, obviously with the Springboks tour that was here. 86 a bit because we were getting over the Cavaliers situation. But the 91 World Cup team where there was an Auckland influence, John Hart was foisted upon Alex Wiley late in the cycle. I think that team had run its race with the public. And, you know, Laurie Mains wasn't a popular choice after Wiley and Hart, but he actually got the public back on board a bit. He got rid of that Auckland influence and he changed things. He wasn't immediately successful, but teams after that, coached by John Hart, reaped the benefit of Mains' work. So they'd be instances where I would think that the public had a bit of enough.
Gordon, do you feel the same way? Are you quite happy and quite refreshed even before he's coached a game this year to see that he's not effectively hands-on here, Ian Foster?
Yeah, well, I think a lot of people are going to have a bigger interest in this game purely because his hands aren't on it so much. I mean, it's a very good point. If you look the last few years, it's very fair to say that you know, people have fallen out of love with this team. There's definitely going to be a few cynics that will be looking at this and go, hey, look, if the All Blacks get up here, you know, with Foster not completely being on board, then geez, that's just another advocate or another reason to say, is he the right man for the job going into the World Cup?
Yeah, it is actually. Before that, of course, Gordon, tonight, the mini tour kicks off tonight against New Zealand Māori. There'll be passion. And at this stage, New Zealand Māori are the underdogs. Not sure about that.
Yeah, I mean, you look at especially a few positions here, there's guys that have a point to prove. I'm really interested to see what sort of performances come from the likes of TJ Perenara and Brad Webber. Cullen Grace is obviously the other one. Going up what looks like a fairly inexperienced Irish forward pack. So, I mean, those players in particular, there's some guys there that probably feeling the sting of missing out on AB selection, and they'll be looking to prove a point tonight.
Okay, let's look at some cricket, can we? Hamish, spoke to David White yesterday. He said there will be a review, there always is. I'm not expecting anything to come out of it. What about you?
I listened to that interview, actually, and the only thing missing was the sound of you banging your head against the wall, because you weren't getting much out of David White, unfortunately. Look, the thing that's galling about this whole thing, and it's highlighted by what Brendan McCullum's doing, and I've mentioned this to you before, is that we had innovation, we had fearless cricket, we had different ways of skinning the cat. New Zealand, on a talent basis, isn't as good as the major test playing nations such as India, Australia and England. So we have to be clever. We have to use our resources in the right manner. We have to be innovative in the way we play our cricket. We have to be positive. And I think we've gone down a really conservative route. I go on about this, but I think we need white ball and red ball coaches. I think it's time to mix that up so that we get our better cricket minds involved. But it was such stodgy, conservative cricket sort of played not to lose. You know, let's pick 100 batsmen because we don't rate any of the guys at the top. Like, it just seems so poorly thought out, and that's the frustration. We have, in the very recent past, had to think about our cricket and had to do it really well because of our lack of resources, and to see the way England marshalled theirs while we fumbled around with ours was really frustrating.
Yeah, but see, you make a point there, but this is what I don't get about it. We couldn't win the series, that was gone. So when you don't have an opportunity to win a series, you look at least to try and learn something, develop something, give some guys experience. That was a perfect example to play Ajaz Patel in English conditions. That was a perfect example to perhaps try someone like Blair Tickner or someone that you've flown over at the last minute. But there we were going, Hamish, into a test match, a five-day test match with three bowlers. Three bowlers. I mean, that's almost unheard of.
And two of the three bowlers are out on their feet. Bolt's effort in this series has been really manful, given the lack of preparation he had. But the thinking behind the whole selection of the team was crazy. Patel has to play. Like, we have to know about Patel. He has to learn to develop. If he's not a better bowler than Jack Leach, I'll eat my hat. Credit to Jeet Patel and to Ben Stokes, who've got something out of Jack Leach. But he has been almost a laughing stock in international cricket until this series, and now we've turned him into a world beater.
Mm. We have indeed. 10 wickets and we didn't have a spinner. Effectively didn't have a spinner. Quite hard to fathom. It's 10:30 here on SENZ. Araha with an update, and then we'll be back with Gordon Finn later and Hamish Bidwell for part two of the panel.
Big talk, big opinions, the panel. Talk
to me, yeah. Hamish Bidwell with us this morning, along with Gordon Finletter. And Gordon, I just wonder your impressions of the cricket. I know you've a keen follower of it, but we've gone backwards seriously this calendar year, and something needs to happen, surely.
Yeah, I mean, I know you guys touched on it just before, but I mean, you've really got to scratch your head at Ajaz Patel missing selection, particularly in that last test. It makes you wonder. There was everything on day five of that second test which goes, well, surely you've learned a lesson here. It obviously wasn't learnt. How much do you need to drum into the selectors, Kane Williamson, Gary Stead, the guys selecting this team? There's a good chance the game goes to day five. You're bowling. You need to take 10 wickets. I mean, since Daniel Vittori, we've been crying out for something coming close to a world-class spinner. We've seen, you know, the likes of Mitchell Santner, that the all-rounder, the guy that can bat, the guy that, you know, was handy for a few overs, it just doesn't cut the cake. We've got a guy that is the closest thing we've had to proving that he's world-class, and we don't pick him. It's just mind-boggling. The guy's 33 years old. I think we're going to look back in a few years and go, we had someone, and we missed our opportunity to have a genuinely good spinner in this team that can do a job late in test matches.
Well, I can relate back to our time back in the 80s, and a lot of people don't like reminiscing, but we had an issue too where we didn't play our spinners enough. John Bracewell and Stephen Bock were damn sight better bowlers than we see in the current crop. And we played them overseas, but we didn't play them much at home. Got away with it there, just as they seem to get away with it here, Gordon. But what it effectively means is that, you know, you got to play half your test matches around the world And you can't just exist on home victories unless you guarantee you're going to win every single game. And now, of course, we can't do that, Gordon. So we've got to do something. And if Paul Wiseman isn't good enough as our spin bowling developer, let's buy one in, surely.
Yeah, and I mean, they've made a conscious effort, in the last few years to, we see guys going away as teenagers or in their early 20s to get experience over in foreign conditions. So when are we going to start seeing this? I just think, we've missed a trick with AJ's.
Certainly have missed a trick with him. So I'll be interested to see what if anything comes out of the over review. Certainly won't be made public anyway. Let's look at some golf, Hamish. I know you like talking about this LIV situation and the PGA. And it seems that the PGA and DP World Tour, which effectively is the European Tour, of course, have strengthened their alliance, extending the partnership through for another 12 to 13 years. I guess that's some sort of a symbol of strength, or is it? I'm not sure it'll faze Greg Norman, will it?
Well, it's going to weaken the DP World Tour because more guys from there are going to be eligible to play on the PGA Tour potentially because of the way the rankings and points things will work. There's a plantation mentality in golf, and it's headed by the PGA Tour. We are the landowners. We have all the money. You are the hired help. You will work where and when we say so. I don't see the alliance doing anything for the DP World Tour. Guys, American guys won't travel regularly to play in Europe. That's what they're trying to trumpet. It won't happen. The thing with LIV is they're in a corner now, a massive corner. The big issue that's coming up for them is going to come after the Open Championship in St Andrews, where I think there's going to be a decision made on whether LIV events will receive official world golf rankings. At this stage, LIV players are still eligible to play the major championships on rankings and on being previous champions, that sort of thing. But once they stop accumulating world ranking points by playing PGA or DP World Tour events, they're going to be stuffed. Guys won't be able to play the majors. And while you can play the majors and you can dictate your schedule a bit more and you can play less events, as the LIV guys seem to want to, it's a workable situation. But if they can't get official world ranking points, they're going to be stuffed.
So effectively too, Hamish, the other thing is that I guess they feel these guys who are possibly sacrificing Ryder Cup positions are sacrificing the ability to play in majors, which ultimately is, I suppose, was the carrot to them. Whether they think enough of them go, then the establishment will bow to pressure. I'm not sure that's going to happen. So have they done the right thing, you think, these guys? Will there be any of them thinking, uh-oh, they're not going to bend here?
Depends on your age and stage. So Pat Perez, as he said this morning on a live press conference, I'm 46, I've just won the lottery, I've been on tour for 20 years, it's not going to get any better for me, this is a great payday, I'm stoked. If you're a younger player, if you're Matthew Wolf, I think he's 22, who defected, if I can call it that, the other day, it's potentially an issue for someone like him. But the thing that galls me about this, and I'm not a Phil Mickelson enthusiast, but he's levelled all these criticisms at the PGA Tour, and now, you don't pay us enough, you don't put on good enough events, you make us play too often. There's no global aspect to what you're doing. Well, they have turned around and done all the things that he criticised them for, which showed they could have done it. Some people will say good on them for doing it. Unfortunately, with golf, a lot of the people talking about the sport have a vested interest. They owe the PGA Tour their living, and so you can't get a straight answer or an unbiased opinion. But yeah, if you're a younger player and you've signed up with LIV at the moment, I think you're probably a little bit more nervous than you were a week ago.
The Warriors are home, Gordon. The Warriors are home. A lot of emotion there at Mount Smart Stadium yesterday, including their first hit out in training gear on their hallowed turf. What are you expecting this weekend? Emotion to get in the way, or are you expecting a really good performance?
I think it's what they need. I mean, you look at what this team's been through the last few years. It's all good and well, trying or, telling players to buy into this thing that is bigger than you. It's about the team. It's about this amazing fan base or this vocal fan base. But when you can't actually see it, there's only so much that words can do. So I think especially for a lot of these guys, I mean, you you look at some of these guys have played close to 50 games for the Warriors and have never played at home at Mount Smart. I think it's the refresh, the reset this team needs. Tell you what, though, if they don't win, the last few years have looked bad, but they've never been front runner for the wooden spoon bad. So if we lose against the Tigers on Sunday, you're looking at us and the Titans in a race for that wooden spoon, and that is a very, very low point in what has been some pretty low years recently.
Very scary indeed. Gordon Finletter, thank you very much for your time this morning. Hamish Bidwell, thank you for yours and your considered opinions as always, fellas. We'll have another panel tomorrow morning around about the same time. It is coming up to 10:42 here on SENZ.